Good evening. The scripture for this evening comes from the book of Hosea, chapter 7, verses 8 through 9. That's Hosea, chapter 7, verses 8 through 9. And if you're reading from one of the books underneath your seat, it's on page 799. And it reads, Ephraim has mixed himself among the peoples. Ephraim is a cake unturned. Aliens have devoured his strength, but he does not know it. Yes, gray hairs are here and there on him, yet he does not know it. And the pride of Israel testifies to his face, but they do not return to the Lord their God, nor seek him for all this.
Might be one of those individuals that when you go to a restaurant, you order your food rare, medium rare, not this guy. I like my food well done, even almost to the point of it being burned. I know that may sound crazy to you, but at least I know it's been done at one time or another. I refuse to bite something and it turn into a challenge that it may bite me back. So I'm just not into that. The prophet Hosea depicts the loyalty of God's people in Hosea chapter 7 and verse 8 that Brendan just read for us. And referencing Ephraim, he's talking about Israel, the northern kingdom. He depicts them, God does, as being a cake that's half-baked. Before we look at those events and time period, I want to remind you of Moses' words to the Hebrews before they passed over into that promised land. Moses calls the Israelites their minds back to a time when they were slaves in Egypt. And according to Exodus chapter 12 and verse 40, they were in bondage for 430 years. Long time to be a slave. Several generations would be born. They would dream of freedom. That was short-lived. Several generations would die. But eventually, they would be set free. And shortly after their departing, they would gripe and they would grumble. They would begin to moan and groan and complain. Some were even saying, oh, it was much better in Egypt. What an insult. I want you to think of that for a moment. What an insult to God. God has freed you. And you have just slapped him in the face with that remark. It was better. It was better in slavery. It was better in Egypt. God became angered at their attitude of ingratitude, and he struck down an entire generation. He allowed the Hebrew nation to wander in the wilderness for a grand total of 40 years. Lessons were learned from those experiences. Moses grooms the Israelites for that entrance into that promised land, into Canaan. And he reminds them in Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verses 4 and 5 about loving God and being faithful to God. Teaching your children, teaching your grandchildren. Interestingly enough, Jesus reminds us of the same thing today as he did there in the New Testament in Matthew chapter 22 and verse 37. So, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. Moses was aware that there were many dangers and many pitfalls that could entice the Hebrew nation from truly loving God as they should. That's why he would forewarn them in Deuteronomy in chapter 6. throughout Deuteronomy chapter 6. Deuteronomy in chapter 7, in verses 1 through 4, again, Moses continues to remind God's people of their allegiance, their loyalty to God. You have your Bibles, and we notice, he says, when the Lord your God brings you into the land which you go to possess, and cast out many nations before you, the Hittites, the Girgashites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, the Jebusites, seven nations greater and mightier than you. When the Lord your God delivers them over to you, you shall conquer them and utterly destroy them. You shall make no covenant with them, nor show mercy to them. You shall not, nor shall you make marriages with them. You shall not give your daughters to their son, nor take their daughters for your son. For they will turn your sons away from following me to serve other gods, so that the anger of the Lord will be aroused against you and destroy you suddenly. Moses is preparing their hearts, just as John the Baptist would prepare the hearts for those in Jesus' day for the coming Messiah. It was very clear what God expected from His people. In order for God's children to stand a chance at faithfulness, they needed to remove any and all spiritual obstacles that would alter their allegiance unto Him. I want you to understand, God has never changed on that position. The author of Hebrews in chapter 12 and verse 1 says, therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and sin which so easily ensnares. Isn't that interesting how the author of Hebrews, he pegs sin. He said it easily ensnares us. Hasn't changed, has it? Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. I think of this little feline friend of ours. Ever seen a cat like that get tangled up into a mess? I know it seems kind of comical, but the spiritual application can certainly be taken away from it. See, that's how it is with sin. We can just imagine this cat as he finds this ball of yarn. He begins to pick at it, claw at it, and then the next thing you know, he jumps in and he's fighting with the yarn. And he's all tangled up. That's how it begins with sin in our lives. Just touch it. Just drink it. Oh, just taste it. Oh, just watch it. Just smoke it. Just ingest it. And then the next thing you know, we have a problem. We're in a mess. We are in an absolute mess. You see, folks, our eyes see things they should not see at times. Our hands touch things that they should not touch, and our feet go to places that they should not go. And we pay a price for it. From the time Moses would admonish the Israelites to the time the minor prophets would prophesy, the Israelites, God's children, they were in a real mess. Self-made problems. The reason we know that these problems are self-made is because God gave His promise to them, if you're faithful to me, I'll be faithful to you. But they refused. They rejected that call to faithfulness. Then we come to the prophet Hosea. When we consider the prophet Hosea, now I know the first thing you're sitting there and saying to yourself, he's saying it wrong. That's okay. You say tomato, I say tomato. It's all good. I have a good feeling we're not going to hell over this one, folks. So just relax. Okay, no need. If you feel like you've got to take your blood pressure medicine, go for it. But I think we're good on this one. Hosea shares with us the time period that this setting occurs. You remember around 722 to 720, the northern kingdom, Israel, went off into captivity. About 40 to 60 years prior to that, we see things being set in motion with regards to Hosea the prophet and his writings, based upon the kings that he lists. Four kings from Judah and a king here, Jeroboam, actually Jeroboam the second, from the northern kingdom. Hosea was called upon to go marry a woman, start a family. He did that. He found a woman. Her name was Gomer. Now, I'm not so sure how I feel about marrying a Gomer, but he did, and he loved her, and I'm sure he did, and started a family. Scriptures tell us whenever you look in Hosea in chapter 1, God telling him, take for yourself a wife of harlotry and children of harlotry. I would say that when we look at this, that she wasn't a prostitute. God is not telling him, go marry a prostitute and have a bunch of children that, are from this relationship that spend off this harlotry. Spun off his harlotry. I think she became that way. If you look in verse 3, it says, so he went and he took Gomer, the daughter of Diblaim, and she conceived and bore him a son. Then the Lord said to him, call his name Jezreel, for in a little while I will avenge the bloodshed of Jezreel on the house of Jehu, and bring an end to the kingdom of the house of Israel. It shall come to pass in that day that I will break the bow of Israel and the valley of Jezreel. Things are coming, your curtain is closing, Israel. And Jezreel, this child that is born, this is a part of the judgment. Conceived again, or she did, Gomer. She bore a daughter. Then God said to him, call her name La Ruhamah. For I will no longer have mercy on the house of Israel, but I will utterly take them away. Yet I will have mercy on the house of Judah, will save them by the Lord their God, and will not save them by bow, nor by sword or battle, by horses or horsemen. Laruhamah, mercy, but not for you. When she weaned Laruhamah, she conceived again, and then God said, call his name Naomi. For you're not my people, and I will not be your God. Yet the number of your children of Israel shall be as the sand of the sea, which cannot be measured or numbered. And it shall come to pass, in that place where it was said to them, you are not my people, there it shall be said to them, you are sons of the living God. Then the children of Judah and the children of Israel shall be gathered together and appoint for themselves one head, and they shall come up out of the land, for great will be the day of Jezreel. So we have three children. These three children, they represent a judgment that God has pronounced on Israel. And based upon the judgments that are given, none of them look good. Oh, there's hope in the future, and we understand the messianic hope that is expressed here. chapter 2, things get bad. They turn out bad for Hosea, our prophet. You see, what happens in chapter 2, Gomer begins to have affections for other men. She begins to shop the market. Her love and her allegiance for her husband is no longer there. You know, there are things, folks, in life that happen that can literally just rip our hearts. Rip our hearts out and crush them. The death of a loved one. That's a sad time for us. The death of a child. That's a sad event. But when someone has been unfaithful in their relationship and those vows mean nothing, and there's one individual in that relationship who's done everything in their power to try to hold things together, and the other one is not interested, they choose to pursue someone else, something else. It rips our heart out. We all know of someone who's been in that position. I've counseled folks in that position. It's a hard thing to receive a phone call at 2 or 3 a.m. from a broken-hearted, jilted husband or wife, and angry at the world. Where is God in all this? And you try to comfort and care for them the best you can, reminding them that God still loves them. Be faithful to who you are and what you are. In chapter 2 in the book of Hosea, that's exactly what is going on. Say to your brethren, my people, and say to your sisters, mercy is shown. Bring charges against your mother. Bring charges, for she is not my wife, nor am I her husband. Let her put away her harlotries from her sight and her adulteries between her breasts, lest I strip her naked and expose her in that day that she was born, and make her like a wilderness, and set her like a dry land, and slay her with thirst. I will not have mercy on her children, for they are children of harlotry, for their mother has played the harlot. She who conceived them has behaved shamefully. For she said, I will go after my lovers, who give me my bread and my water, my wool and my linen, my oil and my drink. It's all about me. That's why I'm leaving. What was the point? What was God trying to illustrate? Folks, God was illustrating a relationship that not only that represented Hosea the prophet, it represented his people, the Israelites. You and I, we had a relationship. I loved you. You said, you love me. Remember whenever Moses went up on the mountain to receive the commandments from God? And they swore, all that you command, we will obey you. They lied. They just flat out lied. To them, the grass seemed to always look greener on the other side of the fence. Remember Moses reviewing the past with the Israelites? Israel always seemed to struggle with regards to faithfulness unto God, didn't they? I mean, you think about it. From the time God liberated them out of Egypt, they were complaining from the word go. And didn't stop. think about that period of the judges. Israel had seen how other nations and pagan nations rule in their affairs. They had kings. They did things differently. You know what we want? We want to be like everybody else. You remember Samuel. There in chapter 8, in verses 4 through 7 in the book of Samuel, you remember the Israelites, you remember God's people, the Hebrew nation, had begun to observe the behavior of other people, and they liked it. I'll begin in verse 4. It says, "Then the elders of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah and said to him, 'Look, you're old and your sons do not walk in your ways. Now make us a king to judge us like,'" what does it say? "All the nations. But the thing displeased Samuel when he said, 'Give us a king to judge us.' So Samuel prayed to the Lord, and the Lord said to Samuel, 'This is heart-wrenching. Heed the voice of the people and all that they say to you, for they have not rejected you. They have rejected me.'" Samuel took it personally. "God, I can't believe this. Look at all that you've done for them. Look at how you have loved them and blessed them, protected them, delivered them when they cried out to you for deliverance. And now they're telling you to go take a hike." How sad. They were guilty of casting off God's precepts, and God, to be their leader, the love of their life. Oh, they would give lip service to God. They still held to their religious rituals, but that's all they were. Just rituals. There was symbolism there. There wasn't really substance. And Hosea in chapter 6, verses 4 through 6, Hosea says, "O Ephraim, what shall I do to you? O Judah, what shall I do to you? For your faithfulness is like the morning cloud and like the early dew that goes away. Here and gone. Here and gone. Therefore I have hewn them by the prophets. I have slain them by the words of my mouth. And your judgments are like that goes forth. For I desire mercy and sacrifice, and the knowledge of God more than burnt offerings." Now, please don't misunderstand. Does God say that, all of a sudden the sacrifices that we see written in the book of Leviticus, they mean nothing? That's not what he's saying. What he's saying is, what's the point? If your heart is not into what you're doing with regards to being a son of mine, a daughter of mine, a child of mine, what's the point? We're just wasting our time. You're not really committed to this. They were religious, but it was symbolism. That's all it was. They had a form of godliness. But that's all it was. They met for worship, but their hearts were truly disloyal and divided. And in our scripture reading tonight, that's why Hosea, God expresses, "Ephraim has mixed himself among the peoples. Ephraim is a take unturned. Ephraim, a tribe among Israel, is what God is referencing. One in the same. And God is providing us with a powerful metaphor explaining the half-hearted loyalty and love of His people that they have for Him. And He's even telling us why. He is saying to His people, because you have made alliances with and reliance upon pagans, they have pulled your allegiance away from Me. Remember? Deuteronomy chapter 7, verses 1 through 4. You have sought and pursued them in every way imaginable. You admired their political system, so you made it your system. You adored their women, so you married them. You have adopted and embraced everything that they stand for. And finally, the icing on this half-baked cake is that you have religiously pursued them. Hosea chapter 4 and verses 11 through 13, and in chapter 8 verses 4 through 6. The very covenant, the very commandments that you said you would be faithful to and abide by, have no other gods before Me, that you have done. As a matter of fact, they were so entrenched in paganism, folks, God reveals perhaps one of the saddest verses, maybe in the entire Bible, but certainly in the book of Hosea. Because when you go back and you look in Hosea in chapter 8, verses 11 and 12, because Ephraim has made many altars for sin, they have become for him altars for sinning. I have written for him the great things of My law, but they were considered a strange thing. Brethren, what an indictment on God's people that God's very own law, God's very own word, is a strange thing to God's people. I know a lot of times we run over and we look at the importance of their people or God's people being destroyed for lack of knowledge there in Hosea chapter 4. But this is equally sad. I gave you My law. You are so detached from Me, you wouldn't know My law if it's smacked in the side of the face. Now I know that I'm paraphrasing, but that's basically it. It's a strange thing to you. They had forgotten about God. Hosea chapter 8, verse 4. God says, you just forgot about Me. You just forgot about Me. Israel was a half, was a cake that was half baked. Ever bitten into anything half baked before? I've shared that experience with you. I have. My aunt had the dubious task of babysitting me one time. She said, Scotty, everybody in Southern Ohio calls me Scotty, so just get used to it. Yeah, I'm never around anyone from Southern Ohio. What do you want for lunch? And I thought, you know what? I'd like to have a boiled egg. That sounds good. She was clueless on how long to boil an egg. But she, God, love her heart, she tried. Water was boiling. She stuck it in there. I went to go play. And as a kid, you lose track of time. You're playing. You have no concept of time. Your egg's ready. Went in and peeled that shell off, and I bit into it, and yolk went all over my face. Just all over my face. I've never forgotten it. I don't think I've ever forgiven her either. So, no, I'm just joking. We laugh about it every time we're together and we talk about it. That is biting into something that is half-baked is not a pleasant experience. I don't want to ask you, is our loyalty to the Lord like ancient Israel's? Are we half-baked? Are we half-baked? You know, no wonder Jesus said what He did in Matthew 22, verses 37 through 38. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all of your heart, all your soul, all your mind, all your strength. This is the first and great commandment. Not some of it. Not three-fourths of it. All of it. Israel failed miserably. He failed miserably. And God's judgments came true for Israel. That's my question for you tonight. That's a challenge for us tonight. It's to make sure that when we said yes to God, we meant it. We meant it. See, the author of Hebrews, when you go back and you look in Hebrews in chapter 12, the author of Hebrews tells us that we are to endure. This isn't a sprint. It's a marathon. It's a marathon. And if you know anything about running, and if you've ever run a marathon before, or a long race before, there are many challenges, many opportunities to quit running that race. When you're a fourth of the way through it, and maybe your muscles begin to cramp up, hey, that's it. I'm done. I got to back out. But something within you says, no, just one foot in front of the other. Just keep on going. Don't stop. You look to your left. You look to your right. And you see people that did stop running. They're on the ground. Reveling in pain. I told you about the one time that's in my bucket list. The marathon. There was a man within distance. You could see, smell, feel the finish line. And he's all crumbled up on the side. You know what I wanted to do? I wanted to pick him up and say, get on my back and let's go. But in today's society, I probably would have hurt him and he would have sued me. So, you know, it's just that simple. Stay there. But you get the point, true, right? You get the point. I want to encourage you. You said yes to Jesus. You said yes to God. Don't let the devil beat you. Keep running. Keep going. If you haven't said yes, I'm going to encourage you to say yes, but mean it. Be all in. Be all in. I am just amazed when I go back and I read the past of Israel's transgressions. Folks, there was a reason God called it a promised land, because God has never lied. He has never lied. He'll be true to His word. He'll be true to you. He'll never let you down. I'll be there for you.